I call this meeting of Sylvania City Council for June 15th, 2020 to order. Will the clerk please call the roll?
Mrs. Cantalini?
Here.
Mr. Frye?
Here.
Mr. Hanem?
Here.
Mr. McCann?
Here.
Mr. Richardson?
Here.
Ms. Stowe?
Here.
Mrs. Westfall?
Here.
Six members of City Council are present in council chambers, and one member of council is attending via Zoom. So there are seven members in attendance, and a quorum is met. I'd like to welcome our visitors to the meeting this evening. We have a scout here tonight. We appreciate you coming. And with, if you would, traditionally, when we have a scout in the room, we ask him to lead our Pledge of Allegiance to start the meeting. So we're ready to go with that.
To the flag of the United States of America, and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
If I may ask, what scout troop are you with? And what school is that associated with?
Schools from Springfield, Northview, all over.
All right. Well, we welcome you here. We're glad you're in attendance. And as I said before the meeting, if you've got a question, put up your hand, and I'll recognize you in an appropriate time. Let's move on to Agenda Item 3, which is additions to the agenda for this evening. I would like to add, with council's permission, on to Agenda Item 11A. We're going to hear a report of the Building and Grounds Committee. I would like to add on to that a further discussion of including the mini park in downtown as part of the DORA, and the issues we are trying to address on the closure of Maplewood. So that will all follow. We can make that 11B if you want, but it follows right along with Lindsay Stowe's report of the Building and Grounds Committee held on June 8th. Mrs. Westfall?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I'd like to schedule a committee of the whole meeting to talk about the charter amendment regarding election.
We'll make that, let's make it 12A. You're going to schedule a meeting. I don't think it's referred to a committee yet.
I was thinking it would become committee of the whole.
Okay. Charter change, 12A, committee of the whole. Additional items from members of City Council?
Mr. Mayor, I would like to add consideration of a potential safety committee meeting following the report from Chief Snore on Item 6.
All right. You are not a member of the safety committee. Is that all right with the chairman of the safety committee?
Mr. Mayor, I think I'd like to hear Chief Snore's report first, and if we feel that there's further items in question, then we could move forward with that.
I'll make a note of it when we get there, and we'll get back to you, Mr. Hanem. But we'll consider a safety committee meeting. I think you're going to hear a lot of information from Chief Snore this evening of the actions that have been taken. But if more detail is needed, that's appropriate in a safety committee meeting. Other items from other members of City Council? Hearing none. Mr. Sanford?
Nothing, Mr. Mayor.
Chief Snore?
Nothing, Mr. Mayor.
Mr. Aller?
Nothing, Mr. Mayor.
Looks like we have Mr. Schreier via Zoom.
Special case.
Anything, Mr. Schreier? Your audio is off. Your face is off. I'm not sure you're there. All right. All right. Thank you. And Mrs. Brining? Okay, with that, is there a motion to approve the agenda as amended?
So moved.
It's moved and seconded to approve the agenda as amended. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries, and the agenda for this evening's meeting is approved. Moving on to Agenda Item 4, approval of the regular council meeting minutes from our last meeting on June the 1st. Mrs. Westfall.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I move approval of the Sylvania City Council meeting minutes from the meeting held on June 1st, 2020, as submitted.
It's been moved and seconded for approval of the meeting minutes as submitted from our June 1st, 2020 meeting. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries, and those meeting minutes are approved. Agenda Item 5 is a COVID-19 update. For the last several meetings, I've had each member of the mayor's staff give you an update. There are no big issues for update, but they are certainly available for your questions. There are a couple items I want to bring to your attention, however. One is that City Hall is open by appointment and the recommended use of a mask through the end of this month. Beginning July 1st, it is our intention to unlock City Council, I mean, City Hall, and make it open to the public. Tax filing date is July 15th, and Mr. Schreuer thought it was important to be back open for that. We might have been open earlier, but the current civil unrest gave me pause, and we've decided to leave it locked until July 1st. But there is no reason for anybody not to be able to get the attention of people inside and come down for a instant appointment or schedule appointment in the future to discuss taxes or zoning or whatever issues they may have. Another issue concerning COVID-19 is the administration's continuing to explore the use of CARES Act funding from the federal government. We're all aware that that's been funded by the U.S. Congress and is in the Ohio legislature, probably to be approved shortly if it hasn't been already. But the wording is difficult for us and many other local communities. And we're trying to clarify through the Ohio Municipal League and through other legislative contacts what the Ohio legislature's intent really is. The federal legislation says that it cannot be used for any budgeted expenses, but can be used for first responders. Well, we're not having substantial first responder overtime. We have, in the last couple of weeks, had a lot of overtime in response to some protest marches through town, and I'm not sure that would qualify, and we have some other minor expenses. But we can't apply those funds, which are over $500,000, without understanding what the rules really are, and we're getting mixed signals. We're working this from both sides of the aisle, trying to get clarification as to what it will do and what we need to do. The first step would be for City Council to pass an ordinance saying that we meet the qualifications for reimbursement and then determine how much we can apply for. But we hope to be able to apply for the full $500,000 plus. But the rules are a little unclear at the moment. Are there any questions for the administrative staff over COVID-19 issues?
Mr. Mayor, could we hear from Toby generally on the current status of our income tax collection?
I discussed that earlier in the day with Mr. Schreuer. He did give you an update 2 weeks ago. And Toby, do you have any further update you can give mid-month? To recall from 2 weeks ago, Toby, our payroll tax is holding pretty steady through May. Is that correct?
Correct. What we're holding was only down $20,000 collected in May, for the month of April. And the entire month of April was shut down.
we're still off, we're actually up here today, $70,000, and we're holding because of a strong first 3 months.
What is throwing the estimate off is the fact that tax filing date has been delayed 3 months until July 15th. And I'm sure that individuals that owe income tax don't want to pay it in advance if they don't have to. So we need to wait for July 15th to come and pass to see where we really stand. Again, I'm sure we're going to be down some, but the CARES Act does not allow us to apply for federal funding to replace lost revenue, only for additional COVID-19 expenses that are not budgeted. And we'll try to find out where that goes. And we hope that all the governments in the state of Ohio will play by the same rules. That's what we're trying to clarify where we're at. And both sides of the aisle are unable to answer that question at the moment.
Mr. Mayor?
Mr. Fry?
I did another follow-up question for Toby. A couple of months ago, when we first started having the COVID conversation, we talked about the elective surgeries being delayed. And one of the things that he mentioned was we were anticipating, because we have a self-pay healthcare structure, an influx once elective surgeries were permitted because we delayed those for a period of time. Have we seen that yet? Or are we still seeing some benefit in that regard from a cost perspective?
Mr. Fry, we have not seen an uptick as of now, but those do take some time to get through the system. So there may be, you know, people out there having those surgeries done and they just haven't come through in our books yet. But we'll keep an eye on it and watch for it. But we have not seen any significant uptick at this point.
What's our expenses? What are our expenses for that section of our budget down year to date, if at all?
I don't have that number right in front of me, but I certainly can get back to you tomorrow morning and get that to you.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Schroyer.
Yeah, Mr. Mayor, I have another question.
I believe that's, is that Mr. Doug? Okay, go ahead, Doug.
Toby, I've seen the city of Mali apparently is taking some actions in anticipation of revenue shortfalls. Have you had any discussions with the Mali finance people to understand why they don't have the same they don't have the same confidence you do in the revenues that will come in on the 15th of July?
I have not had discussions with them. Certainly, if you would like me to, I certainly will. But at this point, I have not had discussions with all they know.
I've had only very limited discussions with Mommy council members and the council member of Perrysburg. And they seem to have, and this is anecdotal and nothing formal, but they do seem to have some concerns about revenues, as a loss of revenues as a result. So I would appreciate it if you would touch base with your fellow suburban finance people and see, make sure that we're not missing something. I'm not suggesting that we are.
I will tell you, Doug, and I think the mayor could better speak to this, but at a mayor's conference call with similar mayors around the area, every one of them said that there was holdings were surprisingly very strong even during these last couple months.
However, Mayor Carr was not on that call, so I can't represent Maumee. Oregon was on the call, and Toledo was on the call, and some of the smaller communities in Lucas County were on the call. And actually, they all said they were surprised how strong their payroll tax collections are. They all have the same issue we have. Until tax day comes, it looks like we're way down. But we are down some. To be clear, we are down. It's just a matter of how much. Other questions for staff, mayor's staff, or me? Thank you. Let's move on to agenda item six then. I've asked the chief to give us an update on his preparations for certification in the Ohio Police Collaborative. That's become an issue in the last few weeks. And last week, Governor DeWine, during one of his press conferences, specifically brought up this subject and the fact that he was encouraging all police departments in the state to meet these standards and that they would be calling each and every one of them to have an understanding why they're not doing it. We've been able to read in the paper, particularly from Sylvania Township, why they don't want to do it. And I think that's true of some other departments. We are not in the minority in Northwest Ohio. We are in the majority that haven't signed up for this. The newspaper articles made that quite clear. But Chief Snorr has been working on this. This is one of the items he discussed with me when he interviewed for our chief's position. He has brought this issue to City Council a couple of times recently for changes that we need to do. And I want to have him give an update. But before he does, Chief, I want to publicly thank you for your overtime and organizational skills to de-escalate and to manage the two protest marches that have gone through Sylvania in the last couple of weeks. Those are difficult to plan all contingency for, and in some communities have caused trouble. You did not let it get to that level here, despite the baiting that was done at the protest march last Thursday, particularly the comments from the organizer, who I don't know if she was a student or not, she was certainly trained out of town, about hands up, don't shoot, and these police are afraid of you. While she was making the comment about how afraid our police were of the students, I have pictures of all of our police officers looking out from their sit-down strike at Main and Monroe, protecting them from being run over by cars. I have to believe if they were really scared of them, they wouldn't be putting their backs to them. So your officers and you are to be commended for responding and being prepared in the proper way. And I very much appreciate that. You and I both lost sleep over that. But it's worked out fine.
Thank you, Mayor. I appreciate that. And these are trying times in our country, and certainly trying times in law enforcement. And you know, the thing that we always try to remember is that you know we are the police, but you know we are also the public, and the public is also the police. We work for the citizens of the United States, the citizens of the state of Ohio, the citizens of the city of Sylvania. And we always try to center ourselves on that, no matter what adversity we're facing. And we stand in solidarity with many of the protesters on several of the issues. Now, obviously, you know, we don't want to join in the anti-police rhetoric or ideas about abolishing police. Those wouldn't, you know, support a democratic society. But there are times where police officers have made mistakes, and we condemn those. And there's sometimes police officers have been, you know, taking malicious acts, and we condemn those. So I appreciate the acknowledgement. And we worked hard with every entity that wanted to lawfully protest in the city to find common ground where we can let them have their events in a safe way to support what they're saying, and at the same time try to cause a little inconvenience or potential for conflict. So I appreciate that. It's interesting that the collaborative topic came up. This is something that I've been interested in, working toward supporting the efforts that's happened here in Sylvania for about 5 years. It's only been really my decision to pursue this for about a year, a little over a year now since I've been chief. And as the mayor mentioned, it was in my action plan. I provided a two-year action plan for things that I needed to be pursued or worked on as the new chief. And collaborative was certainly one of those. And the thing that needed to happen to make it collaborative, for those who don't know, collaborative is basically, it was a governor's initiative. I believe from Governor Kasich, it was from the prior administration. And it was a commitment by police departments to adopt certain policies and procedures and certain operating methods, if you will. And it was voluntary, and some agencies got right on it, and some agencies were a little slow to. At the same time, because it's linked to policy and procedure, one of my primary objectives in the first year was to update our policies and procedures. We had over 130 policies and procedures for a variety of things that we do. And none of those are very simple, concise tasks, and they change over time based on the law, based on best practice, those sorts of things. So I came to council in the fourth quarter of 2019 and asked for the funding to get Lexipol. Lexipol is a legal advisory service that helps you create policy or update your policy, and then it helps you maintain policy. And then the other part they do is they provide training. So that's the other important part of policing, is that you're training on the things that you're supposed to do right, you know, so the right way to do your job. So that was just approved in the fourth quarter. We actually bought that around the first of the year. So the first part of getting that policy and procedure update, I requested from Lexipol that we focus on the collaborative policies first, because there are a list of policies that you have to adopt to be part of the collaborative. And those policies include use of force, bias-free policing, hiring, the new one for this year is pursuits. And those, you know, like pursuit and use of force are very detailed policies. They're founded in Ohio law, they're founded in practice, they're founded in constitutional law. So you need to be clear and concise. Then we also have to work with the labor union to make sure that they understand and that they're on, that there's no contention. So it's not a quick process. And my goal is in the next several months up to the end of the year, and the virus situation didn't help with the process. We were down for a few weeks while we weren't working with them. But my goal is to have a fully updated best practice, legally defensible policy and procedure manual by the end of the year. But as far as the collaborative, we filed our formal application back on May 22nd, and we have just completed the policies required to be part of the collaborative with Lexipol. Lexipol serves over 400 agencies in the state of Ohio, so they have the collaborative requirements built into their policy and procedure and their tag. So the policy is not an actual book. Our policy and procedure, I mean, my manual is not an actual book. It's a web-based app. And so we'll not have to point it up. There are tags or links to the Ohio Revised Code, to the collaborative, so when they're reading the policy, they can also, you know, reference those materials and you know, see not only why we have that policy, but why it's important to the state of Ohio or important to the collaborative, or why it's based in law. So the status is we're formally applied. Captain Dubaker is our implementation specialist with this assignment. He is already has a username and password. We're in the system, and we just talked to our customer service rep, if you will, with collaborative last week, and they indicated now that we have those policies and we're moving forward, we should be certified in a couple of weeks. I mean, I don't have an exact target date, but we are actively working with collaborative, and we have we already had many of the building blocks, you know, in our current manual. Our current manual is in a three-ring binder. It's a little bit dated, you know, and that was one of my initiatives, was to just get up to best. You know, when I've been here since I was 22 years old. Sylvania and the police department have always been extremely progressive, extremely focused on customer service, and those are the things that I value. Doing a good job for residents, protecting people's rights, and I think there for a while with training and other things, you know, we just you know, get behind on the technology. And if you don't stay up on the technology, it changes so fast these days, you really have to have some system like this. Or you have to have a staffer that, you know, keeps up to date, those types of resources. So that's kind of where we are. I would have liked to have some of it done a little bit earlier. I think maybe it would have been done in April, had not had the COVID-19. I don't want to make excuses, but it has been an unusual year. So, along with this, the related topics, two things I want to talk about. Body cams. We came to the, that was in the proposal this year's budget was approved. Again, the virus situation's kind of slowed that down. We have a committee of officers that this is a 10-year purchase, and our current in-car camera system is at the end of the life. It's 10, we have 10 years. We know that we're going to have this body camera and in-car camera system for quite some time, for probably at least 10 years. That's the goal. And we wanted to make sure we had a system that was, that would meet our needs, and the technology wouldn't be, you know, outdated, you know, right after we bought it. So we have we've done a lot of research. We picked the product and hope to come to council by the end, the council meeting in July, and to bring a proposal to make that purchase and move forward with the body cameras, along with the in-car system, which will replace the system we already have. Now, just to give you an update about the types of cameras we have right now, we do have in-car digital camera systems in all of our motor control cars. We also have cameras, the same exact system, in our detective interview rooms. Everything's archived, and you know, everything's the retention schedule is very, very well in place. We don't have any issues with that. And in addition to that, something that we didn't invest in that would probably delayed the need for body cameras, we have taser cams as well. So every one of our tasers has a camera on it. So when the taser's turned on, it's recording as well. So we did have two layers of cameras right now, but since we're upgrading our technology, this is just a good opportunity. The actual cameras themselves aren't that expensive. It's the entire system that's the big cost. So much since we're buying an entire system, this is a good time for us to pursue body cameras. So. And with the collaborative, if you have body cameras, you have to have a body camera policy that matches the collaborative, so that's part of the process. They don't require cameras, but if you have cameras, you need to follow best practices, and we will be doing that.
That was an issue for a while, Chief, that delayed the body cameras in Sylvania. Mrs. Brining might help to answer this. There are questions about public access to those tapes and privacy issues, and I think those have been resolved by state law.
Yeah, the statutes regarding those have been resolved. There was a lot of problem or questions about reaction, about if you can all circle in the phone or juveniles or medical information laying out. You know, we don't have to basically hire someone to go through and redact those in order to make them accessible, and then also the storage for the files. The retention time of those through the files is initially
and you agree, Chief, that issue can be built into your policies for the body cameras now?
Oh, absolutely.
Okay.
We currently have existing policy for the in-car camera use, the systems we use now, and it really won't be a whole lot different. If you make a citizen contact, an official citizen contact recording, you know, the entire time, the technology has advanced quite a bit since we bought this system. The actual body camera the officers will wear will be on all the time, but they won't be recorded. So if I was wearing a body camera and something happened and I turned my camera on, certainly kind of triggered the camera. Another camera coming on in the area, the in-car camera in the car coming on, there's a variety of things that can activate a camera. But if my camera came on, it actually rolled back a period of time. We'll have to determine how long we want that to roll back. But it will roll back and capture the things that happen right before you turn the camera on. So there's a buffering there.
Some of the complaints that you hear in the media are body cameras not being turned on when they should have been turned on, and also non-accessibility of body camera footage being released to the public, and the timing for doing that. I know there was an incident in Oregon Friday night, and the press was on it because we can't get the body camera images yet. Those are all important factors as to when those become public knowledge.
Correct. And much like what we're having in the The only shooting that I'm having experienced was the standoff that was across the street here several years ago. And it wasn't one of our officers that fired shots, that was a multi-agency response to a standoff. And we would do the same thing. We did that in that instance, and it might happen in the future, hopefully it doesn't. But if we were to have any kind of use of force like that, we would rely on the Ohio DCI to do that investigation. Our agency's left now hard enough, we don't deal with shootings that often. I don't see any more in my career, but they can come in and do a fair and impartial investigation. And as Chief Navarro said in his press release, those videos then become under the custody of the investigating agency. So it would be up to DCI to release those. Now, certainly, if there was something that would shed light on the subject, especially for the public and to maintain the public trust, I might lobby them in that circumstance to try to do a release. But I guess it would just depend on the circumstances. I'm sure the answer is in the best possible. So, as Ms. Bryan said, I had some of the same concerns with body cameras initially, because Ohio didn't have as robust law on that type of evidence. And people's individual privacy is important to me. A lot of times we're going on these calls, it isn't a contentious thing. People are, having a problem at home or having a problem in personal life, and I don't think that's always people's business. I think there's much more safeguards than there were initially to protect people's privacy and their identities, especially if they're not a victim of a crime or a suspect of a crime. A lot of that stuff is just we're trying to assist them in a time of need or a time of crisis. So that was a concern I had as well. And then the last thing I want to talk about is the hiring process. And the council thankfully approved, and I much appreciate it, approved the legislation at the last meeting about our cadet position. And again, that cadet position allows us to look at candidates who might not, who aren't already certified as a police officer. And, it's especially today, it's a difficult decision as to what you want to wear a uniform and represent your community in this type of fashion. And, some people might be called to that at a different time. They may have not started out college or, be a young person coming out of high school might have not thought about that. Maybe something happens in their life or they are somehow inspired to serve. And it just gives us more opportunity to give those people a chance to take the test. And it might help us with recruiting, from all aspects of the community, from all populations. So I think it's a step in the right direction. It's another thing that I've wanted to work on since becoming the chief. And I really appreciate the support on that. So
this council has supported you both for the Lexapol contract, which was not inexpensive, and the cadet position, which is not as instant and not as economical as hiring a police officer from another department elsewhere. So we appreciate that support, and that is helping us lead into this collaborative approval. So, okay, questions for the chief?
Chief Schnorr, I have a quick question, but before I do, I want to thank you for your opening remarks. They were definitely spot on. These are trying times, and I worry about you and all of our Sylvania police officers every day during these challenging times, and I thank you for your leadership and continue to pray that all goes well in our community and beyond. Certainly our country has high risk right now. I do feel like you explained the body cams, but I'm not sure that I completely understood it. So I'm going to, take a step back there. The body cams obviously aren't on all of the time, but something you said made me think that there's something that triggers them turning on, and it's not up to the police officer to turn them on. Can you help me understand that?
Well, so the alarm system. So the camera system in the car is linked to the body camera.
Okay.
So right now, an officer, if I was working in the patrol, I would have an audio pack. So I'd have a pager, that picks up the audio for the car, in-car camera. Under the new systems, your body camera is also the microphone for your in-car. So it gives you two videos, two audios. Let's say you're driving down the street and you suddenly have to hit your brakes or you have to speed up to pursue an offender, your camera system will already come on based on certain settings.
Okay.
Speed, heavy braking, the emergency lights coming on, that will also turn the camera. Some systems, and again, we're going to have to
Learn it.
The system can do many more things than probably even needed to do, but we'll have to make some decisions because some agencies have their camera set up, and if your camera's on, everybody's camera around comes on. Now, that would be good on a scene. That might not be good if somebody's in the, you know, in the bathroom or something like that, if you're at the station. So it really depends on the circumstances. We'll have to figure out some of those settings. They can even, you know, set those by proximity where they wouldn't all come on the station, you know, because you might be talking to somebody, you know, confidentially, like a witness or something like that, that doesn't need to be recorded. And then the detectives are interviewing an in custody suspect and, you know, right down the hall. So those are things that we haven't dealt with yet, but we'll have to figure those things out and work with the vendor to come up with the best solution for our community. The main thing is that when an officer has contact with a citizen in an official capacity, it has to be recorded. That's the expectation now, and that will continue with body cameras.
Thank you.
So, Chief, quickly, so is the thinking for them not just always being on somebody's shift, is that just the storage and the cost to store the data?
Yeah.
Is that the reason?
Right. And again, they are on all the time.
Yeah, that's kind of what I was getting at, because I know you said that it could pick up, like, if you wanted 5 minutes before it happened. So, like, it is...
It's right. Now, the only difference is it's not going to have audio during that time.
Gotcha.
And it's not like 5 minutes. It's probably 30 seconds. Okay. There are different settings. There are even ways to go back further, depending on the vendor. You know, that we're selecting has some less options that have more features than some of the other vendors. It is quite an expensive, you know, venture, about $100,000, give or take. We are working with the vendor to get final quote right now. The availability would be an issue as well. But there will be a learning curve with the rollback and all that. But we have the rollback. Currently, our system in cars has a rollback as well. It's not as advanced. That's kind of a benchmark of most police cameras.
Chief, you mentioned that availability for the body camera, and you said sometime in the near future you're coming to us with a request. If, presuming for a moment that we approve it, how long do you have a sense? Is it 6 months? Is it 8 months? Is it 3 months before this thing is up and running?
It's really hard to say. I would say it's probably, you know, I would be happy if we had it in place by November. You know, if we were able to get approval in July and pursue the, you know, that's kind of my goal. The current system, there's no indication that it's going to fail. And we do have the NPAR and laser cameras right now. We are fairly well protected, fairly well covered. Replacing our system and implementing the body cameras is a priority to me, and hoping to have that done here in November would be my goal.
Chief, just to clarify, you've selected your vendor and you've tested these units already?
Yeah, and there are two in test mode in the field right now.
Okay.
Yeah, and then the vendor is a Motorola product, so if you're familiar with Motorola, they're a mainstay in law enforcement. That's another reason. They also have a local vendor here in Lewis County. So right now our vendor is somewhere on the East Coast, which is everything. We've been pretty much assured that if we have a problem, we'll just replace it, you know, if they're on site. So it's, that's a huge factor, is logistics of the equipment.
The other one of the other things I wanted to inquire about, you mentioned about policies and procedures, and you were updating that obviously for this certification that we're pursuing, but you also mentioned that by year end that it will be completely updated.
That's the goal.
Can you give us a sense of how that is likely to change from where we're at now, policies and procedures, to best practices in the situation as we see it today?
Well, we're pretty fortunate that we have the content of our current policy and procedures is pretty good. It is, like I said, it's an old style a series of rear end items around the station, and it is updated by our own staff. So, you know, it's a periodic thing that we go through, and as typically as case law changes. A lot of the policies and procedures, almost all of them, are in the collaborative, except for a few that are new, we already have. And the way we're working with the vendor, myself and the TCAP, you meet with our, with their implementation specialist on the lexical side of the week. And we spend about 2 hours, we cover about 4 or 5 policies per session. So I do some homework ahead of time, I have our meeting with that person, they're doing the content, we're approving the aspects of the content that will be applicable to our agency. There are certain things that they already have pre-written that are specific to Ohio law or federal law, and there are certain nuances in those policies that relate to us here locally. And those are the things that I have to prove one by one. So as we work through 130 policies, this past week we were able to complete 4. Today we worked on use of force that pretty much took the entire session. So it really just, it will depend on what happens between now and then, if it moves off on, you know, time loss and those sorts of things, it will affect the tempo of us completely. However, I prioritize the most sensitive to the beginning here. And a lot of the other policies, we have a similar policy already, it's just bringing on to the new system in a new format. So right now, we really do have 2 policy manuals. We have some policies that are in electronic format, and we still have our community police division manual, if you will, in a hard copy.
So, so you brought up the use of force policy changes.
Yes.
Are we talking about minor modifications here, or are we talking about, I mean, surgery or major surgery?
In substance, there really isn't any change for our procedures. What there is, again, it's in a different format. There are many more citations to federal and state law that we didn't always have listed, just because that wasn't the style. And a lot of that goes back to Chief Saab. Chief Saab really brought Civilian Police Department into the modern era with that procedure manual, which existed when I started the U.S. We were way ahead of the curve on the other agencies. And the content is there, but back when the old style was more, let's say a use of force policy made sense, and then 7 pages, lots of introductions and long paragraphs. The newer format is much more concise and to the point, much more bulleted shalls and that sort of thing than long explanations. So that's the difference. But the content is pretty much the same, and we don't, I can speak to you more specifically to show you how to might some examples. The newer policies do, as we had before, especially when use force stress, intervention by other officers if there's something out of line, that's something that's talked about a lot. Those concepts have been around for a long time, but that's come to the forefront. And reporting, that's always been there as well, reporting use of force. And reviewing use of force. Those are some of the concepts you're going to hear a lot about. They've always insisted we practice those things here, but those are, you're going to hear a lot about that when we're talking about use of force, reviewing, intervention.
And I certainly know very little of anything about police work. That just as far as protocol goes, though. You're talking about moving changes to things like this. I guess I'm wondering if that's to Mr. Hannon's question about setting up the safety committee meetings, whether these modifications, if they could be provided at least to me, or I don't know about other members of the safety committee or council in general, so that we were knowledgeable of what those changes are current to the updated version. That would be helpful for me anyways, to understand what we're looking at and where we're headed.
That's a fair question for a knowledgeable councilman to want to know. And Mrs. Brining, I don't know whether these procedures need to be approved by council action when they're done or not.
I think it needs to be formally approved by council, and I don't know what format you get them into. I was just looking to see if I had a copy of one that I've gotten, but they don't have to be formally approved by council.
Okay, so it's not on that level, but for council to know what's going on, that's not inappropriate, I assume?
As they're approved, we can certainly email them to council, especially the high liability policy like use of force. Those are going through the legal vetting on the lexical side. They're also being, Mrs. Brining and I are walking through those, as well. myself being responsible for those. I wouldn't want to deviate in any way, shape, or form our legal counsel on those or what's in best practice, but I certainly have no problem sharing those and talking about the concepts and why we would move to those. But I would be very concerned about making them populist, if you will, by other policies. It's just, I would want to keep those within best practice.
And I understand that. I guess the other question is with the pace of change in our society and the way things are moving more quickly, what is your vision for how this timeframe kind of sets up, recognizing that we're going from three-ring binder to, you know, online? Are we now, is that going to be an ongoing update as those things are necessary?
Correct. So we're in the process. What will happen is when our policy manual is complete, our relationship with Lexipol will not end. So we will be paid, I believe, don't quote me, but it was around $32,000 for the initial settlement. That's what's called a full implementation. They have already downloaded our entire manual and cross-referenced it with everything that's in their manual. So there's a program that I can see where our current policies link up with the new policies. And then we talk about how, again, our initial policy book was based on the Kalia's standard, which was very similar to what Lexipol is doing now. Just going to do over this, it's something from 20 years ago, but the concepts are all there. And we have updated with some of those things over the years ourselves, but this is a comprehensive update from top to bottom for all our policies.
So, it probably would have been, except Doug blew it out of the water.
After this has fully been implemented, we worked with our implementation specialist, I did all of our policies. We will then have a contract, an annual contract with Lexipol, which will be much less than the initial cost. But in that contract, we'll get monthly training bulletins based on our policy procedure, which is a huge thing, and then the option will electronically sign off on those things. And any updates that come down on those policies, just since we started, I have three or four updates in my mailbox, but we haven't even gotten to the policies that the updates are for. So it's an ongoing, consistent thing. Again, we don't have a research and development office. We don't have someone assigned to writing policies. Mrs. Brandon probably put it in the office. Especially in the high liability area like law enforcement, it's really required to keep everyone safe.
And I know the past conversation was, Chief, that you're very focused on training. So how does the training implemented on so that the officers get this information and that they understand exactly what modifications have occurred?
Well, from the policy side of it, they'll get an actual lesson plan and a little test from Lexipol that they'll have to complete in a certain amount of time, and they'll have to electronically sign off on that. That's not really good enough. That gets like half the policy review part. Many agencies think that's all they do. Things like mental health response, de-escalation, use of force, firearms, response to active shooters, those are trainings that we physically do in person. You know, every year. We were one of the first agencies in Northwest Ohio 5 years ago to implement a rescue task force, which is combining police and fire to respond to a scene of an active shooter. We do a lot of in-person training as well. Again, this year hasn't been the best because of the COVID-19, we're not even allowed to train together really, right? Yeah, because we can't have more than 10 people and we have to maintain social distance. And a lot of what we do is not socially distanced, you know what I mean? So, but those are things we've been doing. That's why you're not hearing a lot about, you know, it's old news if we handle a mental health situation, you know, properly, and it just doesn't, you don't hear about it. And then I can tell you, as a chief, that's our biggest struggle right now. Mental health incidents and mental health commitments and mental health crisis is definitely on the rise. And that along with the heroin and fentanyl is now an epidemic of a challenge, let's say, at least for us to respond to. It's not a traditional law enforcement response. It's not the bad guy who just broke into a bank and who's carrying sacks of money. It's completely different than that. There's many more shades of, you know, gray as far as what's the right answer, you know. And you know, all of our officers are CIT trained. If you're familiar with that crisis intervention training through the mental health board here in Lewis County. So we're always trying to improve those things. But getting that physical documentation and having that training that's related to our policy and procedures is very important.
So this is something the mayor said earlier. Have you seen an uptick in the drug abuse and the mental health items since COVID kicked in here in Salina?
The types of calls had changed. Initially, we saw a rise in domestic violence and then some depression-related calls, people calling in, or check the safety where a family member hasn't heard from someone in a while. Those did seem to rise to the surface. The last 3 weeks, we've been back to our normal mix of everything that we usually do.
But there was a material shift?
Certainly. Everybody was home and dealing with homebound issues. The first couple of weeks, it was domestic violence. People aren't used to being home that much. Nothing drastic, but some of those things need our intervention. Nine times out of ten, it's us going and trying to settle a dispute and make a decision on how to get a person. Ohio has a very, there's a very bright line in Ohio that you assault or a family member or make that person fearful for their safety, you can't be arrested. We don't have discretion on that. If it falls over the line, we have to take action.
COVID-related operations to be mayor.
And domestic violence is a dangerous position for the police officers to go into.
Thank you. I appreciate the help.
Certainly. Happy to discuss it.
Hearing no further questions, Mrs. Westfall, there was a request for a safety committee meeting.
I do have a few questions. I'm sorry. Before you get away. First, I want to echo the comments of the mayor and Mrs. Westfall and commending you and your officers for the work you've done in recent weeks dealing with the issues that we're dealing with as a nation. And I was particularly pleased and proud of the way you and the city responded to the peaceful protests in our city over the last couple of weeks. I am very interested in the reason I suggested we should have a safety committee meeting is I would really like to hear from you in greater detail about the policies that we've apparently adopted and are implementing with respect to the use of force and the recruiting and hiring of minority cadet candidates going forward due to the issues that are focal points of the collaborative issue. I appreciate your discussion here today, but I would like to go into I'd like to hear more about both of those and also how those and I'd like to know more about the policies regarding the implementation and use of the body cams and the car cams going forward. I had forgotten about the taser cams, although when you mentioned that it did jog my memory. I always thought those were interesting. And I'd also like to talk to you a little bit about the history of lethal force in Savannah. During my time on council, I have not received a single complaint of over policing or racial profiling. I don't think this is, my sense is this isn't a problem in Sylvania, but, again, I'd like to discuss that. I'd like to discuss some of your thoughts going forward on policing as we are seeing a lot of discussion about changing the police paradigm, about involving other social agencies and some of the response activities that were traditionally called on police. And I think as council members, it's incumbent upon us to have these discussions. And it's not because I necessarily believe that there is anything in particular we need to change or do, but I think it's something that we are called upon to reexamine, rethink, and maybe confirm exactly what we are doing, but also being open to the possibility that there may be some changes that we want to make as well. And again, I can't say enough that my sense of the way we police in Virginia is extraordinarily good. I think clearly focused on building our community. And I have nothing but the great respect for your leadership, the leadership of your predecessors, and the way we do things in Savannah. But that doesn't change the fact that I think as members of council, we are called upon to look at these things again, particularly as you said, these are trying times in policing. They're not trying because of things that have happened here, but the things that have happened elsewhere across the country have an impact on our community as well. And I just want to, I think it's important that we go through the exercise of re-examining these things, having that discussion, and confirming what we're doing. And that's why I think, and I also don't think council meeting is a place to do that. I think a good place to do that would be in a safety committee meeting, and at least one, maybe, and we'll see how that goes, how much time we need in making a series of that. So Mary, I know I talked with you about this earlier today. I talked with Mark a little bit about it as well. I realize I am not on the safety committee. I would certainly participate in that meeting as I said, you were always in the meeting, so that's what you're going to do. So, but that's my thing.
Thank you. Mr. Hanum. Chief Schnorr, I know that was a tall order. Sounds like he's going to do a whole review of everything, but what I would say is certainly Mr. Hanum can meet with you in advance if he's got some one-on-one conversations, but I do feel like you outlined today elements of all of these pieces, the policies and procedures, the collaborative efforts that you've got going, what's going on in terms of the body cams for the future, talking about the changing policies, talking about the use of force policies. And what I think I heard you say is that all of those are in process right now in an evaluation. It probably isn't the best time to sit down and ask for a comprehensive overview. But what I would ask is that Mr. Aller and you could keep us apprised and there would and let us know when would be the appropriate time to have a safety committee meeting to really get the answers to these things and to have that dialogue. My guess is that's a couple months down the road based on what I heard you say today. I don't need an immediate response. I do think Mr. Hanum makes a very valid point. We have a very interested council. Our safety committee members are very dedicated and sincerely want to understand the good work that you're doing. But most importantly, I think we want to make sure that we're at a point where you have the answers and you're not in a position where you're saying, well, we're working on that, and that's November, and that's, you know, we want you to be able to be as informed as you can be as you try to educate us.
Certainly. We'd be happy to showcase those things and, you know, continue to bolster confidence.
And I don't think there's a need to bolster confidence. There's immense confidence, but I do think it's just informing our council members.
Mr. Blackwell, let me clarify something. I thought we've applied for the certification, correct?
Yes.
Okay. And so we have in place policies regarding the use of force and the recruitment and minority candidates, correct?
Yes.
Those aren't in process, those are in place today.
Yes.
And I guess if nobody else was interested in, be happy to meet with you independently to review those, but I think the time is now to look into those policies and for council to understand those. And if nobody else is interested, I'd be happy to meet with you one-on-one.
Mr. Hanam, I don't think that it's fair to suggest that any council member is not interested. I think that you're doing a far overreach there. I'm trying to be efficient with our leadership time here and with our chief's time and make sure that we are not putting in place some meetings that are not going to be effective at this point in time. Certainly, he shared that he would distribute the policies as they're prepared, so we do have that opportunity to look at them. And certainly, we did ask him to do and have a conversation with Mr. Aller and let us know when would be an appropriate time to have this conversation to maximize our efficiency. So with that, certainly if there's a member of the safety committee that feels we need to schedule a meeting tonight, we do meet again in July. We may be ready to schedule at that point, but I'd like to give you the opportunity to give us some feedback about what makes sense from a timing standpoint.
Mayor, I want to respond one time, and that is, I think the time to have this discussion about our use of force policies and our minority recruitment policies is now, not sometime later. I think the time is now. I think it's consistent with, I think that is consistent with what we're seeing going on across our nation. And so I just want to go on record that I believe we ought to have we as a council should be collectively looking at what we have in place now, making sure that we understand that those policies, particularly regarding use of force and recruitment of minority candidates, and that we are in agreement with those. I don't think there's any reason to put that off. And so I don't share your idea that that would be a waste of time.
I didn't say it would be a waste of time, and I did open it up to discussion among our safety committee members if they felt there was a need. Chief Schnorr, I think you had some feedback.
This is not a matter of safety committee. This is a matter for city council. And I'm not referring to the safety committee on the issue of examining and understanding the policies that we have adopted and put in place. As safety committee chair, you are free to inquire of them. As a member of council, I'm concerned about those right now.
Chief Schnorr.
As Mr. Hanam said, those policies are in place in the new lexical, those two, the hiring and the use of force. And the use of force has been in place since I started here in 94. Again, changes, updates. If it would help to have, I'm ready and able and willing to have a meeting whenever you'd like.
Thank you.
Well, Mrs. Westman, mm-hmm. I could suggest perhaps a middle ground, perhaps, that the chief sends out those policies as they exist today to all members of council so that we have an opportunity to review them, and then if we have concerns, we can reach out to the mayor and the chief directly, or Mr. Aller. And to the extent that it involves the legal part of it, Mrs. Brining, and meet with individual members of administration as necessary in the interim between those, between now and when that time frame comes. I think that would help me be prepared for when the time for the meeting would come. I'm okay with holding off on the meeting, but I would like to understand what we've been operating under.
Absolutely.
And what we're operating under going forward.
And I do think that's what we had talked about, was you distributing the policies currently that you have available.
And I just will add, just anecdotally, once, probably fairly soon, again, we're going through the steps of the implementation with this vendor, our policies will be online. Mm-hmm. As this process moves on, I'm thinking maybe at the halfway point, we'll start to have those on our website.
Mm-hmm.
That is, most agencies, mm-hmm. most progressive agencies do that. They're not a secret, public record. The The collaborative is a statewide effort as well. And, you know, our policies are going to look very much like the collaborative. There might be a couple of words that are different, let's say Sylvania or specific to our procedures, but we're going to follow the best practices that the rest of the departments in the state have adopted. And we really are already in the majority. Some of those things you just didn't have the policy on, but some of the things that are added by the collaborative.
So I think it'll be helpful for us to be able to take a look at those.
Mr. McCann, you look like you had something to say.
Well, I did, but the specific question was, does this, the use of force policy meet with the collaborative's efforts?
Yes, yes. So,
and that's it.
Again, the new Lexapol advised policy that Mrs. Bryant and I have gone over actually has tagged right to the collaborative within the policy. It's tagged to Ohio law, federal law, and the Ohio collaborative.
So you'll distribute those policies. If people have questions, they can reach out. And if we determine that there's enough need to have a meeting, we can go ahead and schedule a meeting.
Happy to discuss those issues anytime.
We'll distribute those to all members of City Council, yes. Not just the Safety Committee.
Yes.
You're welcome, Mr. Hanum's visit tomorrow morning. If he'd like to come in tomorrow morning.
We've had a few discussions over the last
year. All right.
Any
sooner the better, it sounds like. Okay.
Thank you.
Thanks for that update, Chief Snore. Moving on to agenda item 7. This is a delayed issue. The bid dates are running out. We previously took bids and brought to City Council bids for repaving streets in the Brookfield Estates neighborhood. Mr. Aller.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Mayor. We did hold off. Council had asked for that item to be tabled a couple of meetings ago. However, we're at the stage now where this would be the last meeting that we have until we would essentially approve those bids and have to go through the process again. So we brought it back asking that it would be approved. The bid for 13%, over 13%, under the engineer's estimate. Gerson Paving had the low bid in about $255,108.27, and we would ask for approval to be able to move forward with the project.
Mr. Albert, if I may. Not knowing about the $1 million for the July 15th time frame, I'm still a little nervous. Not knowing how much of that money we're going to collect because of the delay. Is there any chance that Kirkland would extend their offer beyond the time frame in the bid response?
We could reach out to them, but we won't meet again until after that time where it was done. So if they said no, then we would leave bids. I would point out too that the $1 million that we haven't received yet, those are operating funds. These come out of the capital funds.
I understand, but at the same time, money has no bill.
No.
That is the government for.
Well, there's other things that can be adjusted with income tax receipts and other things that it would really need to. What do you think if we sit tight on this, what do you think the business would be at again? Do you think it would be of a similar nature? Do you have any reason to think that they would increase if we waited until fall?
I think there's potential for them to increase because the contract is scheduled to be full. So I think there's potential for them to increase, yes.
What's the PCR rating on these streets right now?
They're all in the 50s or lower. There are lowest rated. I should say they're the lowest rated. We do have some that are lower rated, but we're looking at a much larger project for those. But they're the lowest rated that are eligible for the services.
So in your judgment, we need to move on this. We can't wait until next year, or if we get pushed out because of the scheduling.
I wouldn't. I would recommend moving forward with the construction. It's like your home, the cars will always last another year.
Well, I know, that's why I'm asking what the consideration was.
But it's, you know, if we let these go too long, then the water that's getting into them now will continue to grow. We'll go from a resurfacing to a reconstruction and double the cost.
Mr. Schreier, are you still with us? Mr. Schreier? Hey. All right, I saw you unmuted. What is the balance in our capital improvement fund? All right, and this project is $255,000. These are dedicated capital improvement funds put there by our taxpayers to pave their streets. I think this is a project that should move forward. It sends the wrong message if we don't. We've been all along saying we're not cutting back on services, and we cannot use these funds for operations. We are currently trying to correct earlier transfers of capital improvement funds to the general fund with the state auditor, and we are working year by year to correct that citation, which I know Mr. Hanum doesn't agree with and I don't agree with, but it's still a citation. I also would like to remind council that as far as general fund money, last council meeting you saw fit to spend 3.5 times what the low bid was for the design of the city calendar. I did not sign that legislation because I thought that was inappropriate to do. And I would hate to try and answer a question why you can spend 3.5 times for the design of a city calendar, but you can't pave a resident's street. I will have to refer those calls to you if you don't approve this funding. This is appropriate expenditure funding. It's 2.5% of our capital improvement fund. I think it is short-sighted not to proceed and take bids that are 13.2% under budget. And I call for passage of Ordinance 26-2020.
Mr. Mayor, I'm sorry, I would like to join in Mr. Fry's, suggestion that we request that we approach Durbin and see if we can't get a 30-day get an extension beyond the July 15th deadline. As you said, Mr. Mayor, I think your quote was, we'll have to wait until July 15th to really know where we are at. And I can feel right about that. I would like to know where we are on July 15th. And there are two items on the, this item and the next item on our agenda involve expenditure capital funds. And I really don't have a problem with or any issue with the Monroe Street, Caroon Road improvement project issues. Moving forward in light of the two substantial nominating contributions by the state of Ohio to that project. I do have concerns with this particular state conservation project, I will note that the cost of this project is, I believe, $255,000, and I will be happy to explain to anyone who is upset that we've been before with that, how that's different than spending less than $10,000 on the street calendar. But I would like to see us approach Kirk and see if we can get a 30-day or whatever extension we can give you on that July 15th date and understand where we are. And the other possibility is if they would agree to that extension, we could have an emergency council meeting with this issue. When does the bid expire?
Looks like June 18th to me, or July. What is it, Kevin? Yeah, I looked at the wrong date.
June 29th. So that's, yeah, we have a couple of weeks to approach her and see if we can extend that. And if not, we could have an emergency council meeting to consider at that time, after we hear from her.
Mr. Hanum, are you suggesting we extend it 30 days and then we pass it? I'm confused. What?
I'm suggesting that we approach Durbin to get an extension of their bid beyond the time where we have an understanding of what the
what? Okay, I see what you're saying.
So it may be, you have to ask voting on the front beyond July 15th. Maybe a 30-day extension of the
Durbin
bid or a 45-day extension. That's what I would suggest.
Mr. Mayor, may I ask Mr. Schroeder a question?
Absolutely.
Mr. Schroeder, you're up to your, you roll your sleeves up every day and deal with these finances for the city. What's your gut tell you for the July 15th payment? Are we going to get all that money or are we going to get 60% of that money?
I think we're going to get the majority of it, yes.
So, you're saying 51% or meaning 90%?
90, let's say 90. Remember, this is from last year, so the only thing you would be getting are people that just aren't going to pay their tax, and I just don't see that as a huge base in the city of Sylvania.
So, Mr. Mayor, I had a comment. So let's say, hypothetically, if July 15th comes and the worst does happen and we collect 50% of what we expected, this could still cost $600,000 next year if it turns into a full redo instead of a repay. Is that correct, Mr. Aller? So even if July 15th doesn't turn out how we want, I mean, maybe this is a question for Toby, but is it still financially smart to just to do it anyway, to pay $293 today instead of paying $600,000 next year, which to me seems like that makes sense.
It would be my recommendation, as in a worst-case scenario, which is pretty likely that this money is going to come out of the balance, $10 million balance. And I believe that's what the balance is there for. If the service director is recommending that we go forward with this, I don't know why we're splitting hairs on whether the annual budget is going to compensate or pay for this. I think more than likely it's going to be pumped out of our previous, our carry forward drainage fund balance. And I think that's what council companies need to get their heads wrapped around that. It's coming out of that balance, it's not coming out of the annual budget. We're going to be down somewhat this year on an annual basis. And a project like this that needs to come out of that carry forward balance.
Based on Mr. Schroeder's comment about the July 15th collections, I'm willing to move the motion forward, Mr. Mayor.
I think a vote is appropriate in this case.
Mr. Mayor, I would like to introduce ordinance number 26-2020. All members of council having previously received copies, I will read by title only. Accepting the bid of Durbin Paving Incorporated and awarding the contract for the Brookfield States Resurfacing Project, same authorizing the expenditure for the improvements in the amount of $255,108.27, appropriating funds therefore, waiving the second and third readings and declaring emergency.
Second.
It's been moved and seconded that ordinance number 26-2020 be read by title only and the second and third readings be waived. All in favor of that indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Final passage.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I move final passage of ordinance number 26-2020 as an emergency.
Second. It's been moved and seconded for final passage of ordinance 26-2020 as an emergency measure. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
Nay.
Will the clerk please call the roll?
Mrs. Capalini?
Yes.
Mr. Frye?
Yes.
Mr. Hanem?
No.
Mr. McCann?
Yes.
Mr. Richardson?
Yes.
Mrs. Stowe?
Yes.
Mrs. Westphal?
Yes.
Vote is 6-1. The motion passes and ordinance number 26-2020 is approved. Moving on to agenda item 8. This is concern to property acquisition for the Monroe Street Haroon Road Improvement Project. Mr. Aller.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. As you know, this is a joint project with ODOT. The funds that are involved in this project are actual federal highway administration funds. It was a specific safety initiative started by FHWA and administered through ODOT. When we put the original application together and working with ODOT, it was anticipated that we would have approximately $167,500 in right-of-way acquisition costs. When we got into the final design, we discovered that an additional turning lane, actually the queue for the turning lane on Monroe Street to westbound Monroe Street to southbound Broome, that queue lane actually had to be longer than what was originally anticipated in the preliminary study. And because of that, we're having to acquire additional right-of-way. So that has taken the estimate for right-of-way acquisition from 167.5 to a total of $279,694. Those are estimates. There's been no offer of any property owners, it's strictly estimates. This program caps the federal participation in the right-of-way acquisition cost at $150,750. So our share of the original amount was $60,750. Because of that federal cap, any cost beyond the original acquisition costs that were anticipated, and has to be paid by the local agency. So our share could potentially go up the appraisal or discount process right now, and that will define the numbers for sure. But we could be requested for an additional $128,944 in able to fund our local share of acquisition costs. This is the same process with ODOT, especially with federal highway money. We would recommend that we move forward with this. Right-of-way started their investigation into appraisals and things of that nature. But no offers can be made to any of the property owners until this agreement is in place. If you recall, this project is approximately $1.8 million, and our cost initially would have been in the neighborhood of about $180,000. This would take our cost of that project $1.9 million project, and would make our participation approximately $300,000. So I would still recommend that we move forward and
prove the agreement. Mr. Aller, the acquisition cost of $279,694 is an awful exact number since we're dealing with right-of-way acquisition. Is that based on some formula? I'm assuming it is.
It's based, at this stage, it's just based on we do know the land area that we're taking in. It's a commercial zone there, and so they just throw a blanket number at it. There have been no evidence, no restrictions, or anything, it's still in the process.
Okay. Just to make it off a specific number, as part of the evidence.
Sometimes you get down to 26 cents on a $20 million project.
This could prove to be a difficult property acquisition.
I understand.
All right, so you've delineated that it will be a $1.9 million safety improvement project. The city's exposure is about $300,000 for it if we approve this. This was a project brought to us by ODOT, as I recall, for one of the, is it 10 most dangerous intersections or what?
We were actually in the, they studied the top six intersections as part of accident counts, our concerns with Lucas County, and the proposed improvements to this intersection is one that they all had the largest cost of benefit. Impact, and so our chosen.
It is a good improvement, but it is not going to be an easy property acquisition. All right. Mr. Fry, you do have Ordinance 40-2020.
Thanks, Mr. Mayor. I'd like to introduce Ordinance 40-2020. All members of council having previously received copies, I will read by title only. Authorizing the mayor and director of finance to enter into a real estate agreement number 34971 between the State of Ohio Department of Transportation and the City of Sylvania for right-of-way acquisition relative to the Monroe Street and Maroon Road Improvement Project, appropriating funds for the anticipated right-of-way acquisition cost in the amount of $128,944, waiving the second and third readings, and declaring an emergency.
Second.
It's been moved and seconded that Ordinance Number 40-2020 be read by title only and the second and third readings be waived. All in favor of that indicate by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Motion carries. Final passage.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I move final passage of Ordinance Number 42020 as an emergency measure.
Second.
It's moved and seconded for final passage of Ordinance 42020 as an emergency measure. All in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? Motion carries, and Ordinance 40-2020 is approved. Moving to Agenda Item 9, you've had reports previously about the great success the city and the township are showing in cooperation for the establishment of the first Joint Economic Development District, or JED, between our communities after decades of trying to get one of these started. Both subdivisions have approved the JED agreement, and one of our responsibilities is to appoint a member to that JED board of directors. You have legislation in your council packets to appoint Mr. Sanford, who has been at the forefront of the negotiations for this JED, to be our representative on that board. We have resolution number 15-2020 to accomplish that. Mr. Sanford, any comments?
Yes, Mayor, just to add that there's five members to the board, the city, township, a member representing the owners of the property, and in this case would be Oakley, that's within the district, and then a member representing the employees, and then those four board members will select the fifth board member. And then once the territory is established, then it's treated as a part of the city for taxing purposes. That's when Toby will get involved in collecting income tax.
And that five-member board arrangement is set by state law? Okay. I recommend the appointment of Mr. Sanford. Mrs. Westfall.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I'd like to introduce resolution number 15-2020. All members of council having received copies in advance, I'll read by title only, appointing William D. Sanford to the Sylvania JED 1 Board of Directors for a term of 1 year, waiving the second, third readings, and declaring an emergency.
Second. It's been moved and seconded that resolution number 15-2020 be read by title only and the second and third readings be waived. All in favor of that indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Final passage.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I'd like to move final passage of resolution number 15-2020.
Second.
It's been moved and seconded for final passage of resolution 15-2020 as an emergency measure. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries and resolution 15-2020 is approved. Thank you, Mr. Sanford, for your efforts to successfully negotiate with this, with the township and to Mrs. Brining as well. This has been a long process. I thank also Mr. Oliver at the township. He has been instrumental in helping to move this project along. Moving on to agenda item 10. We have a petition for a zoning change from R3 to PRO for property located at 6710 Maplewood. It's in your council packets. This is for referral to the Planning Commission. Mr. Aller, I do have a question about this map. I believe the property we're referring to is on the north side of Maplewood. The map shows two properties outlined. Is the other property outlined to the south, the existing PRO zoned property?
Yes, number Stansley's work out of.
Yes.
Yep. So don't be confused with that. We are, it is an even numbered parcel or address. So it's the property on the north side of the street. And it is outlined on the property. It fronts both on Maplewood and it makes a connection to Lane Drive to the east. That's the property we're talking about. I'm sorry, say that again.
The former Kepler property, that's the one on the south side.
That's the south side, yes. Right. We're talking about the one on the north side, right, which is currently owned by the applicant, Joyce Donnelly. All right, again, this is for referral to the Plan Commission. They will get back to your recommendation and we'll have to follow the normal procedure, which is a set a public hearing and process it as normal. Mr. Hanum, can you make a motion?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Yes, I move referral of zoning application number ZA-2-2020 to the Planning Commission for its review and recommendation.
Second.
It's been moved and seconded to refer zoning application 2-2020 to the Planning Commission for their review and recommendation. All in favor of that indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. And the Plan Commission does meet in July, on July 15th. Prior to your next meeting on July 20th. Okay. Moving on to agenda item 11, committee reports. A, Building and Grounds Committee meeting held on June 8th. Ms. Stile.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. On June 8th at 9 a.m., the Building and Grounds Committee met to discuss the potential expansion of DORA. In attendance was myself and the chair of the committee, King Capanini, Patrick Richardson, Mark Fry. In addition, Chief Schnorr, Fred Residing, Joe Sanford, Kevin Allen, and Doug Hanum were present. Properties that are under consideration must be owned by the city, and that includes the Historical Village, the Sister City Park, which is behind the museum, Maplewood Square Park at Main and Maplewood, River Center Park at Main and Monroe, as well as parking. The expansion is a long-term change that requires consideration for both current and for the potential use post-pandemic. So during that meeting, we discussed a number of things, trying to explore whether or not this would be a safe, reasonable, and necessary, or maybe not even necessary, but something that would benefit our residences in a way that helps not only with our current situation of highly valued outdoor space, but also long into the future to make sure that the downtown area is strong So some of the things that we discussed, Chief Schnorr was kind enough to give us some of his input on it. And essentially, no officer is currently available for dedicated monitoring at these sites. It would only have to be an occasional officer when they have extra time. That's for regarding security of this. Generally, the more open and visible the site is, it means the easier it is to secure and the lower risk of issues. That's something we should keep in mind during this discussion. In relation to the other properties, Historical Village and Sister City Park are secluded, including the nearby parking lot behind the museum. Nearby residential neighborhoods could also be a concern due to noise and proximity. Extending doors to parking lot is discouraged due to separation from the street and the ease of drinking on the way to drive a car. Maplewood Square Park, which is the one at Maplewood in Maine, that has high visibility and is central to the Door District. But at the time of the meeting, Maplewood was not owned by the city but its leased, and Leslie Bryden was awaiting confirmation on whether that land leased by the city would be possible to fall under the Door regulation for accessible access. River Center Park has a high visibility, but it's next to a high traffic street, so it could be a popular one to go most complete and put traffic on someone on the street. However, that would be the only problem south of River Street to determine if it would be included and could cause boundaries to keep it. Hours and chosen sections of Dora for either the Historical Village or other parts of the Dora potential inclusion. There was unknown legalities for that, and so we were looking to see whether or not we could make exceptions for different areas. And that's because, specifically for the Historical Village, student programming happens during the day, and there's concerns about whether or not having open containers during school programs would be an issue. Also, on occasion, to increase their revenue, Historical Village host private events, and there could also be DORA and those events. In addition, the question was brought up of who would hold liability if something is damaged. There are restrooms in front of the village. Currently, the restrooms are, for the most part, used for school programming, and Heritage Sylvania, who is currently in charge of maintaining those restrooms, does not have the resources to meet the regulations for socially distant, current, necessary cleaning schedules, and then even looking beyond past this, would not be able to do a daily cleaning. So the question is brought up, who would be responsible for it? Maplewood Dora pedestrian space has been shown to be popular so far, but has also had some issues that need to be addressed. And that was an effort to respond to needs of the area in a trial format to see if we can help in the meantime. Environmental Design Group may have recommendations based on an upcoming downtown master plan, but we do not have that yet. There could also be potential ties to a potential upcoming Maplewood engineering project. And so it was decided that we will observe Maplewood and Dora over the next month or however it stands to assess demand for expanded outdoor space for pedestrians. And given how that trial goes and the new parklets that have been installed, and also since Toledo has incorporated more closed streets, seeing how everything balances out over the course of that month. We have scheduled another Buildings and Grounds Committee meeting for 8 a.m. on Thursday, July 16th at Council Chambers to further discuss this. But in general, there are a number of questions and issues that were brought up that we needed more time and thought before we passed a permanent legislation for special properties. Thank you for the chance to make your update.
Thank you. Questions for Lindsay? I would like Mrs. Brining to report on her findings concerning the mini park.
As Ms. Staff indicated in her report, I was waiting for a couple of answers back from the Ohio Department of Transportation and the committee meeting. Since steps from our meeting. I did get the answers to the questions. First is that we can include the mini park in the Dora, which is clearly great.
Huge.
Yeah, exactly. And the second issue concerns that we have relative to Pennsylvania, the hours and blocking off. We can establish different rules for different parts of the Dora territory without getting specific separate Dora. That was my concern because we don't have a population to support the establishment of two Doras, but being able to, we do have some flexibility with moving areas off and having different hours for different areas within the singular park. So.
All right. We feel it necessary to talk to Reeves to make sure they don't object to this. They are the owners of the property. Collectively, we don't think they'll have a problem with it, but we need to be in contact with them to talk about it. In the meantime, Mr. Sanford and Mrs. Brining prepared what we handed out to you, which is an application to the Sylvania City Council to expand the current Dora to include the mini park.
Exactly. This is the procedural step that we need to take in order to go and incorporate the mini park into the Dora.
And what is the process and what could be the schedule to get that done?
So now that we have the application just submitted, within 45 days after it's filed, my institution is by the middle of July. You could potentially have a public hearing before that meeting and have the ordinance prepared to amend the Dora to include the mini park at the July meeting. Is it time?
Sure is. Okay. I don't count 45 days between now and July 20th.
You know, we can also, we can have 30 days.
30 days, okay.
It's 45 days from the date the application is filed to the council has to act on it.
All right. Thank you for that clarification.
Yeah, sorry.
My recommendation moving forward would be for City Council to take the action recommended by Mrs. Brining and file this application, and we'll talk to Reeve Funeral Home, and we could tentatively set a public hearing for July 20th prior to the council meeting.
Yes.
We'd have to schedule it before that. There's a public hearing concerning the South Briar zoning change, but we could schedule it at 6:30 or something like that. I think it's a priority to do this. It has not been in Chief Snore. You have done a wonderful job avoiding confrontations in our Dora. I've had concerns about the mini park. I have personally seen people with Dora cups in the mini park. I even saw a well-known local attorney see me ride by and get a concerned look on his face when he saw me drinking there illegally. We are not taking any action against people like that.
Well, as we talked, during the report, I don't have a dedicated patrol there. We've responded to two complaints that I know of since the Dora started. One was a problem at an establishment. It was just during the Dora time. It was specifically related to a Dora cup usage or anything. But it was during the, the time the Dora was going on, people weren't joining the Dora, that incident basically came forward with that issue, that the person had an outstanding warrant not related to the activity. The other were some complaints, but specifically one issue about noise and problems in the Maplewood closure. So,
which we'll talk about next.
Right. But so those are the only incidents I know of. We're not specifically patrolling it. And again, a lot of the things going on right now, we're not really trying to. We're trying to avoid conflicts if we can with the public, there's a lot going on right now. But that being said, if there are problems that could be an issue for public safety, we would address those. I don't have a dedicated...
I'm sure you will.
So that's probably leaving a little bit more of an opportunity for people to do things like that. I will say, while we're there for the protest on Thursday, I have my hands full with making sure that went smoothly. There were people riding bicycles, drinking Nora cups. That is, you know, consuming an alcoholic beverage while, I mean, you can't do that. You know, you're still operating a vehicle unless it's a bicycle. But, you know, if you know any of those folks, they seem very comfortable riding around. They must live somewhat close because they're on bicycles. So I think we need to do some education with that. I mean, we might be able to do that, you know, with the officers in person. But, you know, it's nice to have the door, but we have to remember that there are certain laws, and as people consume, they forget about those. So it's something we just need to be, you know, exercise some prevention.
All right, Chief. Thank you. Leslie, we need a motion to file this application?
Yes.
That would do it?
A motion to accept the application and set a public hearing date.
I move that we accept the application to City Council for the expansion of the City of Sylvania designated outdoor refreshment area.
And should we add on to that and set a public hearing date of July 20th at 6:30 p.m.?
So moved. And then you second.
Okay, it's been moved and seconded due to accept the application and set the public hearing date for it for Monday, July 20th at 6:30 p.m. in this council chamber. All in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? The motion passes, and we will start counting the days to that public hearing. Does that public hearing get a formal advertisement?
Mm-hmm.
So we'll get that in the paper as well. Okay, with that, I would like to move the conversation on to the complaints that the administration has been fielding concerning the Maplewood closure, and to have a discussion that the circumstances have changed. When the administration and I took action to close Maplewood, there was no inside service from our local restaurants or bars. Since then, both inside the Five opened their second floor, and they can serve people up there. I believe that their service area, their service numbers are almost the same as they were prior to social distancing. J&G's has recently reopened their business for inside restaurant, so they've had to take out the center tables to do it. They've also put more picnic tables on the north side of their building, on the south side of Maplewood. The DSA has successfully installed the downtown parklets, providing more outdoor seating. And it appears that the mini park will also be available for the Dora area. To me, that's a large change of circumstances, and balanced against the negative reports that we're receiving from property owners, both in the downtown and further west on Maplewood, I need council's discussion concerning a time schedule to reopen Maplewood. I think there is now sufficient outdoor seating area, but we are receiving complaints which are not confirmed. Obviously, the chief doesn't have these as filed charges or anything, but of rowdiness and drug abuse on that block. And the local property owner is complaining that it is hurting his foot traffic into his store, that and that he can't rent one of his spaces. And we have present with us tonight, if she wishes to speak, I believe a resident of one of the three apartments in that building. It's entirely up to you. I'm not...
I would like to speak.
Then I need you to come up to the podium and tell us who you are.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you for your patience getting here. This took a lot longer than the 40 minutes I told
you. And you're welcome. I was not prepared to speak tonight, but after listening to the proceedings, I would like to just point out a couple of things. I live at 569 Main Street, apartment 3 above Little 6. My apartment faces both Main and Maplewood. All of those windows.
It's got to be a beautiful apartment up there.
It's a beautiful apartment, and it was lovely until Dora came.
The clerk needs your name. I'm sorry.
Sheila Schoen. S-C-H-O-E-N.
Thank you.
Where Maplewood was locked up, things changed dramatically for all the residents upstairs above Double Six. We not only lost four parking places, we gained a lot of loud, rude, crude, hot smoking people that yell up in our apartment windows. It's absolutely intolerable. We have to go to bed at night in a decent hour, get up and go to work. We can't sleep. You can't imagine. You can't think of how close that is. It is extremely loud. A couple of things I jotted down. I have seen drinking over in the small park. It's not Laura. It just spills everywhere, the drinking. It's not necessarily very clean and tidy when I go to get to my car in the morning. I don't know who's responsible for cleaning that area, but they're not cleaning it. I think that this also encourages perhaps driving while intoxicated, driving with open container, people on the bicycles. It seems as if the rules of public impact and noise are being ignored. Let's see what else. I was wondering if Dora did come with a time limit, with a noise ordinance, with something to give the people who live down here every day, something to hang on to that's helpful. Instead, I'm hearing Dora's expanding.
Was the door a problem for you before Maplewood was closed?
It has been a problem last summer, before COVID, on Redbird walks. It's pretty tough to navigate getting home from work, carrying your groceries in, and dealing with the people. Now, I'm sympathetic that we want a great downtown, and we want to bring people there, and we want to sell our services there. I'm not against all that. But this last closure of Maplewood has muted. It's just obnoxious. And I don't think we want to bring that crime into our city. I have not called the police. My neighbor has. I will. Usually they say, well, they have a permit. I don't know if Dora has a permit for all this. But it's really quite disturbing.
For legal alcohol consumption, they have a permit, yes.
But for noise and time?
City Council set the times from noon to midnight, yes.
Okay. That's very late.
It certainly is.
The later it gets, the louder it gets, the more obnoxious it gets, and then I don't assume these people are walking home. I assume they're in a vehicle and driving while intoxicated. There's also a heavy smell of marijuana up in our apartments. That's another big problem.
All right. We appreciate your comments very much.
Thank you,
Mayor. I want to hear council's opinion on this. I had asked Mr. Aller to come prepared with a recommendation on possibly reopening Maplewood. It's already been determined we need to open it before the start of school, but with the situation changing and all these other seating areas becoming available, it's my intent to send Mr. Sanford to talk to Inside the Five and to talk to J&G about reopening Maplewood probably a week from today. But I want to hear council's input on that and your positions prior to taking that action.
Mr. Mayor, just for a point of clarification, to reopen Maplewood, would that be have to take an act of council? Maybe this is for Ms. Browning.
No, that does not require a council action. That is a mayor, in this case, it was a manual
to consider
peace and.
Gotcha. Did we pass a resolution to close it?
No.
Okay, I couldn't remember how that worked. Got it.
Initially, when we had the committee of the whole meeting, it was back came up. And then I did some additional research into the charter and who had what powers.
Yep.
And I realized we didn't need one, so.
And we reported on that in the committee meeting that there wasn't a need for us to actually advance the legislation.
Yes, thank you.
It has been a success for our downtown, but there are downsides to it as well. It has a limited life based on the start of school and school bus circulation beginning in August. But based on the changes, it appears that it's time to make a change.
Mr. Mayor, may I?
Yes.
I'm so sorry that you were having these issues. That certainly I don't think was the intention of any of our council to bring trouble to the downtown area. I wonder if perhaps instead of closing down the west side of Maplewood, if perhaps temporarily on maybe just weekends, closing down the east side of Maplewood, since that would be next to the Maplewood Park, which would already be a part of this future expanded Dora area. It would be further away from your apartment, so hopefully the sound would be less, or some of maybe the, I think I read the issues of people trying to look in and things. That would be a certain distance, so maybe that would help address that. And if it's just on the weekends, then it would also help address the issue of hours being the way that we're in the morning for work the next day. And it would also clear the parking spots that were concerned with business on the first floor. I was wondering if, whether you and the administration are on the council.
We've already started discussions with that, and I need Mr. Aller to help me with this one. And Mr. Sanford has given us the understanding that in Toledo, where they're closing streets just for Friday and Saturday nights, that the business owners are doing the barricades and setting the tables where they need to be. The idea of connecting the mini park with the new tables that are put out on the north side of the J&G building, and if council doesn't know, J&G is contemplating putting a canopy over the top of those tables if the building owner agrees to it. I don't think that application's been filed formally with Mr. Aller and with the city, but we have been inquired as to what would be required to do it. Building owner has to apply for it, not the tenant. We are working, I need Mr. Aller to speak before I say things that he doesn't agree with, but you know, perhaps there is a way for the city staff to close that street before they go home Friday afternoon with barricades, and then those barricades be taken down Sunday morning by the business owners and the space cleaned. Mr. Aller, you better talk, because I'm just going to keep talking.
from a safety service standpoint, I think the best option is for the streets to be open. You know, streets are, the intention of streets is to move traffic and to move to allow people to get from point A to point B. And that particular street, Maplewood, I think that addresses the beginning of this closure. You know, that sees, I think it's upwards of 1,800 vehicles a day, or did see upwards of 1,800 vehicles a day. Those 1,800 people for the last 30 days have had to find a different route to get to and from wherever they go. So, from a safety and service standpoint, the best option is for you to be open. Can it be handled on a part-time basis, Friday and Saturday? Our crews would basically set the closure up on Friday afternoon before they left, and then presumably pick the barricades up on Monday morning and make the turf. Is it logistically possible? Yes. I think some of the business concerns that we have, though, on in the current section, they're going to have the same thing on the opposite section. That the credit union or law office there, that's better, going to have the same concerns. So, you know, I don't know. I think the purpose, the mayor kind of addressed it. The intent of doing this is when they weren't able to have the indoor seating, and all they had were could be exterior seating. They now have that ability. So the need has changed. And I think, you know, it would be my purpose that we get back to allowing streets to be streets and get away from some of these.
Thank you. Further input, Mrs. Capellini.
So it's a long-term thought. In one of Mr. Kelleher's emails, he said he felt like we set him up to fail somehow. And I almost feel like maybe we did by, I mean, that I feel like the second floor of those buildings should be zoned for business or office. And maybe it was a like when he redid that building, we should have encouraged him to put in offices or share. I mean, I know the Stansleys have had really good success at the top of Chandler's and the top floor of above Beautiful Blooms and the Fuller Art House and the building next to the parking lot. And we just forwarded something to the Planning Commission for workspace. I feel like the second floor of those, of all of those buildings should really be zoned for, I guess we're calling it PRO or office. Because as our downtown grows and we get more restaurants and more bars, is what we're hoping for, especially when 200 more people move in, we're going to have more of these problems that we really maybe need to look at a zoning change for our two blocks.
I'm downtown. Not sure how you zone for the second floor. It's already zoned B3 or B4. It's B3. But B3 allows a residential usage in there. I don't think you can mandate that it can't be used for residential. It could be encouraged not to be used for residential,
right.
But it's not a zoning change per se.
I do think it would be interesting to see what environmental design would say about that thought process, because certainly they've encouraged mixed use and living arrangements in the downtown area. So I think that will probably be part of that expansion at this point.
They were encouraging third level residences.
Just those two blocks.
Yeah.
I mean, it just makes sense because we're going to run into more and more of these problems as we continue to expand. And then a second thing that I would hope that, Billy, you could encourage Mr. Kelleher to join the DSA and have a voice, because I really feel strongly that if he would have been part of the DSA and part of this decision to start with, we might not have made the same decision. But we were very transparent with our organization that manages our downtown. So, I mean, I'm afraid that our next decision, which he's chosen not to be a part of, might be worse, but.
Mr. Mayor, I had a couple of thoughts. I think the one thought of there not being a need for it anymore, I'm not sure that that's the case. I don't have any numbers or stats, but anecdotally, I mean, I've been out there, I'm, you know, fortunate to live around the corner, and I've frequented it quite a bit over the past 30 days, and many times have I seen both J&G's and Inside Five full on the inside, every table full, upstairs full, and the outside, every picnic table full, and all the tables full around J&G's and the park. And it almost feels, and the parklets in the past couple of weeks, I've seen those full. It almost feels to me like it's, there's a need for more of these kinds of outdoor spaces. At least it would make me feel comfortable if we had some sort of a public hearing type meeting. I know we've heard from a couple people who have had issues. I know I've talked to people that live or work in the vicinity who love it, the closure, and I think that we should maybe have some kind of a public hearing to hear all points of view before a decision is made what to do with it.
I don't think that we had made a commitment to a permanent closing. In fact, I thought we were in another position on that discussion.
The original motion, and correct me if I'm wrong, I believe was said to close Maplewood until council said otherwise.
Right, and I think I challenged that, but the council felt comfortable to do that to a later point in time. But I don't think there was a final decision, certainly for permanent closure of that space. Not that we need a big discussion about that.
Yeah, of
this
course.
Moment,
I'm not saying it's permanent. But the mayor had mentioned opening up on Friday in a week, and I would like to get more input. That's my point.
I do think that we were in a position prior to this where we were able to maintain a healthy flow in our downtown area, and people were comfortable with the DORA format last year. It was the COVID crisis that changed what happened and changed our need. And I think we need to remain focused on why we did that. It was a temporary fix based on a temporary situation. I do think some of those issues have been resolved at this point in time. Perhaps I can't speak to if they've been completely resolved, but we've certainly identified some new areas that do allow for additional outside community seating with the parklets, with the park, and with what we're going to be doing with the expanded Dora area. And I think that certainly community input is always valued. Community members are always welcome at our council meetings to provide input, but I do think that we want to be very cautious in the next steps here and where we go with leaving that road closed or closing the east side as well. I was actually an advocate of closing the east side the last time that we had this discussion, and the messaging then was it couldn't be considered because of the credit union and I forget the other business there. So it was quickly dismissed. So I find it interesting that now it's become kind of a key point of discussion. So I really encourage council to move cautiously as we think about these next steps. I don't know that we help ourselves by opening up another location. It just presents the possibility for other problems. And our job is to have our community downtown road open. I really feel uncomfortable every time I go down Main Street and I see our middle lane blocked off by cones and a big sign. It doesn't look attractive and it doesn't look comfortable. It looks very unwelcoming.
It is a great success for a certain group of people and businesses downtown. And it was probably strengthened by the riots in downtown Toledo and sent some of those people out here. But it is not appreciated by some of the neighbors and it's a difficult process to reverse. Mr. Sanford, you've been wanting to say something.
Hey, Mayor, excuse me, I'd just like to add a couple of things that we remember it was the administration, or I brought the recommendation to close the street. And again, it was after that discussion of what should we do and what could we do differently for our downtown at this point in time. The consistent thing that I heard and I talked to not only Dan Cavalier that owns this building, but other people, was in because everything happened so fast, we didn't solicit input from neighbors or anyone, was the, at first, people were surprised that it was closed. They were used to the temporary closures for festivals and events and things, and that's what I think is, I agree with Kevin, that could be a way to maybe come to a compromise to going forward to work with it. So I don't think we anticipated what the response was going to be during the pandemic with the need of people to get out and go places in the street then. And it has been a success for some, for people. And I've talked to Patrick a lot about times that he's been there and it's great it's being used, but then you hear the other side of what's happening in the community. So I think there's I agree, Katie, that I think I'm going to encourage Andy to get more involved. His point was, I think he was very supportive of everything that will go along, and this kind of just put them over the edge, kind of thing. That's why he came to complain at this point in time. I think going forward, he's going to be more involved in the downtown.
And maybe even whatever strategies that they're using to find the second floor office use tenant. Is there something you can...
I'll disagree with you on that, because you're talking about mixed-use development. Mixed-use could be office, it could be housing. Housing can be very successful on the second floor.
I'm thinking about the yoga studio.
I'm sorry?
I'm thinking about the yoga studio, the old yoga studio that's empty that he's complaining that he can't rent.
That could be probably more of an office, I think.
Yeah, maybe right. There's something you can help him with to find a tenant.
I think he'll be successful in finding as things start picking back up, because there is, I think, demand from some of the places downtown. But again, and I think people choose to live down there. Patrick still told me, he knows guys that people that live in some of these places, they want to be there. We want to always have that opportunity. But I think this was something we didn't know how this was going to go. And I think it was a great response. We tried something, we turned it around in a quick time. But there's been some bumps, and I think we got to respond to that. This is a person, the investment in that building is unbelievable. If anybody knew how bad shape that building was. I mean, it's great that somebody like him got involved and made the investment. I just think we have to listen to that.
Mr. Fry.
I read the concerns and I recognize the use of the space, but I think you summarized it well in the beginning of the conversation. The circumstances have changed. Situation has changed. it was meant to be temporary. We moved incredibly fast on this, like warp speed for government and the movement of this to address the concern for a short period of time. Those circumstances have changed, and I know that I'm sure inside the five of G&G's loves this because it gives them extra seating capacity and they make more money. But to Mr. Allen's point, that's not what the street is for. If we're going to have a broader conversation about what we're going to utilize the streets for, and that at that level, then we need to have a broader conversation, and it needs to take time. It isn't next month. It is a series of long-term plans that we would have to lay in place with the downtown conversations that we've been having. And I think we've met and tried to help those businesses on a short-term basis, and I think we have, but we've also heard from our residents, and I think it's time to step back from that with all the other things that have occurred, with the new seating from J&G's, with the potential of the corner park, with the park that's being installed. There are other opportunities that have shifted along with the ability of these places to open up and have people inside. To me, those are material changes. You pointed them out, and I think you're absolutely right.
Mr. McCann.
I'd like to concur with Mr. Fry and others that I think, and to your remarks, Clint, I think even sooner would be better, meaning this Friday or this Sunday, having action to open up the street by that time.
I would recommend the action be taken on a Sunday night or a Monday morning to take down. And we just, I would like the administration, Mr. Aller, Chief Snore, and Mr. Sanford to have a chance to think about the changes. I want Mr. Sanford to talk to Inside the Five and J&G. He's been in conversation a lot with Mr. Claverly. Those have not been pleasant discussions. And we will make a decision in the next, either this week or next, what action we can take. But I'd like to have the business owners have a chance to react as well. Yes, we move fast, but they need to have a chance to regroup as well.
Mr. Mayor?
Mr. Hanum.
Yes, thank you. I've heard the comments this evening, and I read our email, and I don't mean to diminish those in any way, but I will say that I have had many more in the 2025 range. Comments endorsing our use of this section of Maplewood for this purpose. I'm not there at 11 or 12 o'clock at night, so I can't speak to that. The only reasons I have been there at all was simply to observe it. I'm not spending a lot of time in bars and restaurants right now. I understand the concerns, but I think there is, the opening up the main park is still some time off. I know we went fast on this to open it up because of Memorial Day. I hate to see it closed before the 4th of July, but that's what we're going to do. I'm sure we'll all get over it. I would hope that we would consult with the same downtown businesses that we consulted with when we opened this up before we closed it. And get their input as well going forward. I guess ultimately, if I understand correctly, this is your decision, Mr. Mayor. I would concur with Patrick that I would like to have a little more input on this, but if this isn't our decision,
I appreciate your comments. I'm not ready to make a decision on this yet. I need input. We will send out staff members to talk to the downtown businesses. I saw the survey that was done by DSA. There were people that wanted to close Main Street. There were people that wanted to just close Maplewood, which was the administration's position. There were people that wanted to close both, and people wanted to close none. We'll take a look at that again, and we will let everybody know what the status is ahead of time before we take that action. Ms. Dow.
Mr. Fry, sort of inspired me for a thought of, while we are looking at potential expansion of Flora in the longer run, whether it's to the park south of Monroe Street or into the historical village or otherwise, would it be fitting to include looking at streets, not as an ongoing closure, but as a sort of regular known temporary closure during summer months, and
trying
to incorporate that into that larger, long-term plan.
I like that idea. Toledo's seeming to have some success on that. And maybe it's because they have a special improvement district that pays the expenses, or they have business owners that take the responsibility of safely setting up the closures and taking them down. We have very heavy picnic tables in there that are not easy to move around. That was for sanitation purposes. They're the plastic picnic tables that are quite heavy. We're going to look at moving those, or at least some of those, into the mini park if we can maintain proper physical distancing there. We don't have the total picture yet, but I like the idea of temporary closures. We already do it for festivals and events downtown. Maybe we can schedule it for Friday and Saturday nights, but I don't think it should go into midnight. Bill, what time does Inside the Five and J&G's close?
Inside, I believe, stops serving at 10.
How late does the noise go in your neighborhood? How late is the noise?
Mr. Mayor, it goes well past the time I go to bed and turn on two fans so that I can go to sleep without hearing it. I would just like to add in that Maplewood area. I think it's nice to assume that those restaurants are feeding those people. However, they make it very clear, we're not serving this area. It's like the Bible says, we are not serving out here. So people are bringing their own food and beverages. So what are we looking to provide?
Oh, wait a minute. They're bringing their own beverages.
Oh, yes, sir. Yes, sir.
That's not legal, is it? Alcoholic, I assume you mean alcoholic beverages.
I'm assuming that's what's in their getting, yes. I can't prove that, but again, we are not having police patrol, so we're not looking at open containers.
Well, we're going to have to take a look at that. It's a difficult time to have police patrols. We're trying to avoid confrontation. Police officers don't want to catch COVID-19 either. The chief. Yeah, I can say that I ride my bike. I've been up my many evenings. I'm up there. I'm riding my bike, so that's not after dark. Weeknight evenings, I'll see two or three tables busy. On Friday and Saturday evenings, I see a lot more. It was interesting to see that space during the peace protests or the protest march that went through there. People at the tables were having a great time watching the entertainment go by. I almost got knocked off of my bike that night by Mrs. Capellini as she pushed by me. She was so excited about it. I turned to your husband and he just shrugged like a...
There she goes.
Chief.
If I may, just again, to expand on your point about COVID-19, that is an issue.
I thought you already did, but we need to do it at a council meeting. You're right.
We had heard complaints about
okay.
Social distancing down there. Typically, we don't react unless we're notified by the health department. But the issue of people bringing in outside alcohol, if they're in the mini park or not, those are all code violations that at some point, if somebody complains, we're going to have to enforce. And when you go into an area where people are drinking, you try to enforce violations like that, it causes conflicts. I don't know that, you know, and I've gotten complaints from some of the other businesses, because I was in one of the stores today, about the deliveries. When they make their deliveries, they usually, the trucks usually turn right on Main Point. Now they're having to drive to residential areas with their trucks. That's another issue. It does impact more than just that corner. And, you know, it concerns me, bothers me that residents would be negatively impacted. You know, we do serve the residents and businesses, but people that live here get a little bit more of our here because they're here 24/7. So some of those concerns reach me, and, you know, whatever it's worth, whatever we can do to try to keep quality of life for everyone and not negative situations that my officers might have to intervene on, you know, would be in the best interest of us, for the residents.
Police are trying to de-escalate, not escalate situations.
Right. So there's ways we can make both happen, both, you know, serve the interests of the businesses that are there, both businesses, because I hear from both sides, and also reduce crime, status offenses, and the possibility for conflicts between patrons, or patrons and residents, and patrons and police officers. You know, that's where, you know, we'd like to land on that in some way, shape, or form. So, but as the days go on, I hear a few more comments, a few more complaints. I've also heard people that are very happy with it. And I saw it, I've seen it operate myself. It's just managing it can be tricky, and whatever we can do to try to, you know, uphold the rights of the businesses, the residents, and reduce conflict. Appreciate it.
All right. Thank you for your comments.
Mr. Mayor.
Mr. McCann.
Serving hours are 11 p.m. Monday through Thursday until 12 Friday and Saturday inside.
12 midnight. Okay.
There is an establishment that serves until 2 a.m. in the door, though.
The Sodbuster?
You can walk down to the, if you, which, you know, it has been used.
That's beyond the hours of the Dora, though, I believe.
Dora, yes, you're right. Yes, correct.
So they should not be selling Dora cups. That should be alcohol served on premises.
Right.
All right. Well, I appreciate everybody's input. I welcome more input from you as the administration studies this over the next week or two to make a decision. It will not be an easy one. The toughest decisions are always the ones that you can't make everybody happy. It'll come down on the side of safety, though, more than likely anything else. So I'm done with that. However, Lindsay, the clerk tells me that you need to actually set that building and grounds meeting during council meeting. You did it during your committee meeting, but you really need to set it here.
I move to set a meeting for the building and grounds committee on
July 16th.
Second.
Been moved and seconded to schedule a building and grounds committee for Thursday, July 16th at 8 a.m. in these council chambers. For the discussion of the Dora expansion, possible Dora expansions. All in favor of setting that meeting indicate by saying aye.
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 Opposed? The clerk is ordered to post that committee meeting. All right. We've talked a lot about that. I think it's time to move on to our last agenda item, which was committee referrals. Mrs. Westfall added a possible discussion of the charter change or setting a committee of the whole meeting to do that.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Yes, I'd like to schedule a committee of the whole meeting to discuss the charter amendment for elections. This has been something we've discussed a couple of times. However, I'd like to share with you that we really do need to make any final decisions and pass any legislation at our July meeting. So it seems to make the most sense that we gather together prior to that. We did ask the law director to also look at the charter, and she has some other recommendations that she may make that we will want to consider. Perhaps
other updates in the charter.
Yes.
To update some things. That's what that reference was.
Yes. And Mrs. Brining, you might share with the group, just to refresh everyone's memory, what's involved with approving this so that it can get to the ballot, and that this is a ballot issue.
This will be included as a question on the ballot in November, council just needs to pass a resolution placing the question on the ballot. We do that the July 20th council meeting. That will be plenty of time before the August 5th deadline. I believe this was the coming half. And that will actually be good timing because if there's any issues, we can correct it prior to
Thank you. So I'm hoping to set a meeting for either Tuesday, June 23rd, or Wednesday, June 24th at 8 in the morning.
Wednesday would work better for me.
So would Wednesday work for you? Wednesday?
I can do Tuesday. I would have to be out of here by 8:50.
Okay. 8 a.m.?
Did you say June or July?
June. Mr. McCann?
Wednesday.
Wednesday. Mr. Hanum?
Wednesday,
June 24th at 8 a.m. in council chambers? Okay. And Mrs. Brining?
Yes.
That works for you. Okay. So I move that we have a committee of the whole meeting to consider charter amendment changes for elections on Wednesday, June 24th at 8 a.m. here in council chambers.
Second.
It's been moved and seconded. All in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? Motion carries, and we'll have the clerk post that committee meeting date as well. Thank you, Mrs. Westfall. Any additional business for the consideration of council this evening?
Mr. Mayor, I just will share with council that I understand Long Beach Council this evening rejected the addition of Lucas County as a charter community.
Well, they might still have time for reconsideration. If council, this council's not aware, they did have a TIF, a tax incremental financing zone that would have cost their community money. I think Tarta was offering to make them whole over that. I'm not sure. I'm not sure what their reasoning is. I'll read all about it in the media, I'm sure. Thank you for that update. Any other items for consideration of council at this time? There are three information items that you can refer to. Is there a motion to adjourn?
So moved.
It's been moved and seconded to adjourn. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries, and this council stands adjourned until its next regularly scheduled meeting 5 weeks from tonight on Monday, July 20th at 7:30 p.m. Thank you all for attending.